What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care, so sit back, relax, and defocus.
This podcast is in partnership with Optometry Times.
Well, hello and welcome to the Defocus Media Podcast. I'm Jennifer Lyerly, and today we are going all in on a new treatment in the world of cornea and ocular disease. And I'm joined by an expert in cornea and contact lens. Actually, he's taught me a lot of what I know. So welcome to the show, Dr. Michael Marino.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Marino, you reached out to me, about a couple of months ago about a new treatment that I used on one of your patients called Oxervate. And I think you probably were one of the first optometrists in the United States to have used this product.
I was the first optometrist in North Carolina, whether the United States or not, I don't think so. But it's only been prescribed, when I first prescribed it back in June of 2019, it had only been prescribed about 700 times in the U.S.
Wow. Oxervate got FDA approval to come to market in August of 2018, and it is a treatment for neurotrophic keratitis. Let's dig in a little bit about what type of medication this is, because it is a brand new product, and the way it works is really innovative.
Yeah, it's basically, it's recombinant nerve growth factor. So it is one of the first biologic FDA-approved medications, basically, for human growth factor, especially with nerves. It's basically, it has a bunch of limitations in how it can be delivered, which we'll get into a little bit later. But it basically causes your corneal nerves to grow back. Because as you know, a lot of people with chronic corneal conditions, one of the major issues is that their corneal nerves decompensate, they don't feel things anymore, and it just causes the problem to get worse.
So when do you know that you have a patient that's a good candidate potentially for this?
So from everything I've read, it's basically anyone who has any form of neurotrophic keratitis. That is really the only medication it is approved for. And honestly, really the only thing it would be good for, you know, in this case. Now, a lot of different things can cause neurotrophic keratitis, any damage to the trigeminal nerve. The most common, I think about 65% of people who take it have recurrent herpetic infections, whether they be zoster or simplex. There are some indications for chronic dry eye disease with 3+ to 4+ SPK. Chronic keratoconjunctivitis sicca can cause neurotrophic keratitis. So those are kind of the big ones that are involved.
That's crazy. So we think about, you know, when I'm thinking about herpetic disease, I know we talk about some of the virus, of course, living in the nerve itself. Is there any potential risk of things that you've read about maybe reactivating a viral episode by treating it with a nerve growth factor?
No, I haven't read anything about regenerating a previous infection. In fact, about 80% of people that were treated with Oxervate showed no recurrence of neurotrophic ulceration within 2 years after the initial treatment. But you have to be absolutely certain that they are not in active herpetic ulceration and that it's a neurotrophic ulcer. That's the big one. Because if they have active infection and you throw that on there, you might as well throw a steroid on there too, because it just makes it worse.
So, I mean, you mentioned a really big point, obviously, on that one. And part of figuring out if it's time for this medication is knowing when the patient that's a good candidate is sitting in your chair, which is the process you had to go through when you decided to start this treatment for a patient. So tell me a little bit about the patient that you did the treatment with and how they came to your practice.
Sure. I first saw the patient back in 2009 she had been treated by another doctor. She said, I looked at the chart, it was quote unquote years before, for a herpes infection in her eye. And when I saw her in 2009, she had a herpes simplex infection, basically. And then I treated it, you know, kind of the classic way with Viroptic at the time, because I don't think Xirgan existed 10 years ago, and it calmed down. And I basically treated her off and on about 5 times over a 3-year period. And then after about 2012, it stopped. It just didn't come back. You know, so, but from her initial one, the infection before she saw me, she had some stromal haze and a little bit of thinning in the area where it happened originally. So over the years, I'd just seen her for, you know, every 2 or 3 years, she'd come in for just routine exams. And then back in, it was actually a year ago this month, she came in with a true ulcer. Like every other time, it was kind of the classic, you know, dendrite ulcer. This was a discoform ulcer that was there. And so I treated it, you know, so I, you know, started her on, her insurance wouldn't cover Zyrgan. So I started her on Veroptic again, or generic trifluridine, and then, you know, oral antivirals as well. And every time I would get the ulcer closed and would start some steroid just to, you know, as the overlap, kind of the classic treatment, every time I would get her off of the virus, boom, the antiviral, it would come back, you know, not immediately, but within 2 or 3 weeks, she'd call me and go, my left eye is feeling a little itchy again. I need you to take a look at me. And I'd come in and the ulcer would be back in full, like I'd never treated it at all. And just did that off and on, off and on. And then I talked to a corneal specialist friend of mine and told me about it. And he said to try amniotic membrane to get it to grow over. Didn't touch it. It was almost like nothing happened, basically. Wow. Same thing with amniotic membrane. Cannot use it when you have active infection. Have to make sure it's just a, you know, an ulcer, basically, just the ulceration. And I just kind of left it at that and was going to refer her out when this corneal specialist, Dr. Stonecipher, who I've mentioned before, he said, there's this new drug called Oxervate that is basically made for people with ulcers like these. And then he set me up with the representative from the company. And you know, in June of this year, I talked to the patient about it, just counseled her on it, and she was willing to try it so we could actually fix her problem. So we started the treatment in July of this year.
What was her vision kind of roughly before you started treatment in that eye?
So thankfully, the area of the ulcer is below her visual axis. So her best corrected vision in that eye has always, since I've seen her from back in 2009, has always been about 20/30. Okay. So that's what's always been her best vision during active, like when this kind of really what brings her in. And that's kind of a key thing. She doesn't feel it. You know, she says it feels a little itchy, but you know, it's like a 3 millimeter deep ulcer on her eye and she feels it just a little bit. And she's not a contact lens wearer. She's never had LASIK. This is just a normal, her eye just doesn't feel anything. Mm-hmm. Her vision will drop to about 20/50 or 60 during the acute phases.
Can she tell that her vision's getting blurry, or that doesn't even bother her even?
That's usually what brings her in, is okay. she gets glare and blurred vision. Incidentally, her eye feels a little itchy when it happens.
That's always what's so interesting about these patients with neurotrophic keratitis or ulceration. They'll not necessarily obviously have like 20/20 vision, right? But they'll come in and they'll be like, my vision seems wavy or like rainbowy, because they have this glare sort of feel. So they'll have these like nondescript vision complaints is what I found. Of course, like more so than any sort of like sensation of pain, since they can barely feel anything on that eye, unfortunately.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why they think that using this for, you know, stage 4 keratoconjunctivitis sicca, which is basically they're classifying as neurotrophic keratitis, because mm-hmm. the nerves just don't work.
Well, let's talk a little bit. So you start this patient on Oxervate. What's mm-hmm. the dosage? What's the length of time? Like, what do optometrists need to know about actually prescribing this drop?
So basically, the drop is expensive. So if you were paying out of pocket for this drop, it would cost anywhere from $12,000 to $13,000 for the entire course. It basically is used. It's also, if someone is older or doesn't really like putting drops in their eyes, it's going to be a very hard sell. It's basically drops every 2 hours up to 6 times per day. So 6 times per day, every 2 hours for 8 weeks.
Wow.
You know, so it's a no joke kind of treatment. And the reason for that is that the molecule itself cannot be stored in anything but glass, and it cannot be exposed to, like when you open the vial for it to be used, within 12 hours, it doesn't work anymore. You know, so when you get this medication, they ship it out week to week with 8 vials, just in case you mess one up or break one or something like that. that you have to, you know, use a different sterile applicator every time. It's quite, if you look at the insert, which is available online, it's like 19 different steps you have to do to actually just put drops in your eyes, you know, for it. So the representative will supply you as the doctor with a fake kit, like a kit that just has saline in it. But it includes the vials, which need to be refrigerated except for the day of use, the plungers, the alcohol wipes, everything, and the picture instructions. It's like a card that tells you when you took your drop, so you really take it all the time. So it took me about 20 minutes of going over it with her. And she's in her 50s and very with it, you know, kind of patient, to basically do it. But she was so bothered by it that she was motivated for it.
That is by far the most intense dosing schedule I've ever heard. When you couple that with glass vials that are individual use that can't be exposed to light. And like you said, you really have to have a patient motivated to do this treatment correctly. Otherwise, it's not going to do a thing for them. And it's $12,000 down the drain.
Now, one thing to keep in mind too, at peak treatment, this woman's taking 9 to 12 drops a day, mm-hmm. you know, with her virus. So, you know, the main thing is you're kind of telling them, look, this has a really good chance of making you better, but it's going to take 2 months and it's 6 times a day. So, you know, you have to kind of keep pushing the light at the end of the tunnel. And that's what you need to do. So yeah, you have to have, it's of doctors that I've talked to that have prescribed this more than once, like I have, they say that some people just do it for a week and they just stop. They just don't want to do it anymore, just because of the way it is. But that's not common. They say the vast majority of people stick with it because you actually see results within about 7 to 14 days.
That's great. So what kind of results can patients start to expect about that 1 to 2 weeks in?
So there is a study in the Journal of Ophthalmology that kind of has really good pictures about this. So I'm going to reference it here, but if you go look it up online, you can basically see these pictures. And the pictures that I have of my patient very much mimic this, except my patient wasn't quite as bad. But basically in the first, I would see her back every 2 weeks too. That's what I would do. And that's what they recommend. When I saw her back at the 2 week visit, she had basically a 3 to 4 millimeter ulcer. At the 2 week visit, the ulcer was about 90% closed, which was the most it had been closed in over a year. And she had said that at that 2 week visit that she was feeling a somewhat intense itching, like not intolerable, but an itching and a tingling in the temporal sensation of her eye. And I was perfectly quiet. She said it never got red. She was very compliant with the drops. And in my discussions with other people and my initial thought, and I'm sure you're thinking this too, that's the nerves growing back.
Like yeah, she can feel again.
Feeling, exactly. And that's kind of people, when you put them on, anti-inflammatory dry medication, they mm-hmm. say after about 4 to 6 weeks that they get like a burning sensation because it's kind of their corneal sensation coming back. It's kind of the way she described it, except way more intense. And then when I saw her back for her 4 week visit, and I just told her just to take some Tylenol and put ice packs on it, and then she was really fine. She just mentioned it. At the 4 week visit, the ulcer was completely healed over, but it was hazy. Okay. So, kind of like that classic 3 days after someone gets a marginal corneal ulcer from a contact lens. Mm-hmm. So it kind of looks like that. You treated it, except it's not infiltrated. It's just kind of hazy. Okay. Her vision at this point had gotten down from about 20/60 to about 20/30, at this point. That was at 4 weeks. At 6 weeks, she missed her follow-up visit. So I don't have a follow-up visit from then. And then the 8 week visit, she was completely healed over. There is a faint, faint scar with no staining whatsoever. Vision was kind of between 20/25 and 20/30. But again, she had already had thinning before I saw her, you know, over 10 years ago. So I don't think she'll get much better than 2025 or 30. But that was it. And really the only thing that really she said about it was that it was just a real hassle to use. But, you know, a few months have gone by now and I have not heard from her, which is the longest I have not heard from her in over a year.
Wow, that's fantastic. And did she at that last follow-up visit report any sort of like feeling of discomfort now that she could maybe have a little bit more feeling in the eye, or had she gotten kind of used to the corneal sensation again?
She did make a mention that she felt like her eyes felt the same now. Like she couldn't really quantify it, but she said her left eye felt like her right eye did. And interestingly, she was using artificial tears more now than she was in the past. Probably because she was getting normal.
Her eyes probably
needed it. Just getting more, you know, normal kind of dryness feeling and everything like that. So I plan on seeing her back. You know, she kind of wanted a break from everything from like 15 to 20 times this year. So I'm seeing her back after the beginning of the year, and we're going to kind of reassess at that time.
Well, let's talk a little bit, because I know earlier in the case history, you talked about how she had... And one of the times you were treating her, Zyrgan had come out, but her insurance did not cover Zyrgan. So right. She was still on a Veroptic for treating the active herpetic infection. How did the insurance process work on Oxervate? Because it is, like you said, it's like $12,000 to $13,000 out of pocket without insurance.
Yeah. So it's basically you cannot just go into your ERX or write a prescription and send this to any pharmacy you want. There is one pharmacy in the United States that is approved to make this medication. So what you have to do is you have to contact your rep. The company is called Dompe, D-O-M-P-E. It's an Italian company. And there's one pharmacy in the U.S. that's allowed to make it. And you have to basically fill out this paperwork front and it's just two pages front and back. And what you do basically is... the patient has to sign the paperwork, and it has virtually everything except a credit application on it. it has the patient's insurance information. It has, it gives them permission to see if they qualify for medical aid and just every kind of, they look for every single possible way for help in paying for this medication. Okay. And from there, they kind of handle it all. And they said people will spend anywhere from nothing to about $500 total for the treatment.
So even though that price tag, like if you go into GoodRx, it's going to feel kind of scary. Patients are not actually paying that once all the company gets involved with discounts and outreach and things like that.
Correct. And I think basically they just, if the insurance doesn't cover it or, well, the thing is it's relatively easy to get prior authorization because no other drug is for this, and this is what it's for. So as long as you use the proper diagnosis code, then, if you put on there keratoconjunctivitis sicca, it's going to get denied all day long.
Right.
But as long as you use neurotrophic keratitis, which is what it's for, it runs through everything from, all the different drug statuses to every kind of thing in the playbook of getting this drug paid for. And then if it doesn't, I think they just kind of quote unquote put everyone on aid, from it, basically. And it just seems like they're trying to get as many people to use it as possible. So to get it out there.
The word is not out based on, talking to other doctors. I think people are pretty unfamiliar with this treatment, which is why I really wanted to talk to you about this on our podcast this month. But I'm sure as they build more patients, more presentations, more lectures, some of that coverage might potentially go down, but at the same time, like now is a great time to get your patients, if you know you have patients that are good candidates, because there's a lot of incentive for the company to get them the medication.
Absolutely. And it's not, this is, honestly, I came across this patient by luck. I mean, the incidence of neurotrophic keratitis, which is in this ophthalmology article, is, depending on which study you read, between 2 and 4 per 10,000 patients. So, true neurotrophic keratitis is not common, so depending on what kind of practice setting you're in, and probably even where you practice. You know, I mean, it's you're just not going to run into it. And it's probably, you know, if you see a bunch of younger patients, you know, patients that are under 40, you're probably not going to see it unless you treat a lot of herpetic infections. Mm-hmm. You know, so you have to be on the lookout for it. And it takes I would never have treated her in 2009 with this, even if the drug existed, because if that ulcer healed up and it never came back, she didn't need the drug, you know, cause she didn't have neurotrophic keratitis. She just had a tough healing ulcer. Whereas this was a year of an ulcer that never healed. That's neurotrophic keratitis. So you look for underreported symptoms with an eye that looks terrible, and that's basically neurotrophic keratitis. But it is rare, so it's tough.
And I'm sure after the description of the patient that you shared, I mean, that sounded like an absolute nightmare to me, where I wouldn't have been sleeping for the entire year wondering about this woman and her cornea. So you also have to be a little bit of a tough doctor to go through that whole kind of ordeal with the patient when you're talking about something that scary that's not healing.
Yeah, and you have to have, you know, when you're ready to prescribe this medicine, you have to have confidence that it's going to work. If you just kind of go into it going, yeah, I've read some good things about this, but I've never really used it and it should work. But, you know, if you're like that, the person's not going to want to take it. You know, it's just like anything else. You have to be an advocate for the patient getting better. Right. You know, that's what I practice for. And it's what most people should be practicing for, is to make their patients better than they were when they walked into your office. And so, if you want to be able to do it, you have to be able to do it with every kind of medicine that's imaginable. And this is a new thing that can treat. And I think probably in 5 years, 10 years, I think there's probably going to be other drugs like this, and we'll be able to treat a lot more things with it than we do now.
Well, I did a little bit of research before joining you tonight because I wanted to be more up on what's going on with this medication. And from what I was reading, obviously, like you said, the company who makes Oxervate, based out of Italy, in Europe, there are a couple of companies looking at recombinant human growth factor treatments for eye diseases. And in addition to really severe dry eye, like you were talking about, as a potential category where this type of medication could help, they're also looking at applications maybe for glaucoma or retinitis pigmentosa. So we might be looking, like, if you can regenerate potentially nerves on the cornea, what other nerve damage needs regeneration in the eye? There's a lot of possible applications.
Oh, indeed. Could you imagine then combining that with some type of stem cell therapy to get people to grow new retinal cells?
So this is an exciting new category that we might just be on the very cusp of. And we can say that you were one of the doctors who led us here first, Dr. Marino, and knowing that optometry has a big role in this.
Yeah, and they are, the company Dompé is very open to optometry. I mean, you know, the woman had, my representative had no qualms about me prescribing it. You know, I didn't have to pass a test. I didn't have to do anything. I mean, they're just like, you're a doctor. You take care of people's eyes. Here you go. Here's what you need to prescribe it.
Any other advice that you have for doctors that are wanting to offer this sort of treatment to their patient on how to best educate themselves? I know we're going to cite the ophthalmology journal that you mentioned, where that you had seen some of the case presentations, to let you know that what you were seeing in your patient's follow-up was what you should be seeing. But any other resources or advice that you can give?
I mean, most of the information I got because I have a wonderful corneal specialist that I work with. You know, so, you know, develop a good relationship with a corneal specialist. And that really has helped me in my treating overall of, you know, herpes infections, and not being afraid, you know, to know that you have a backup in case you get in over your head. And I don't know if I would have heard of this medicine if it wasn't for, you know, Dr. Stonecipher. So that would be my number one thing, would be to do. I haven't seen this in any journal. I haven't seen it anywhere else. I'd happened to go to a meeting at the end of July, and there was a, you know, there just happened to be a lunch on it, but it was a, it was an ophthalmology meeting that I went to. It wasn't an optometry meeting. So, you know, just be an advocate for yourself and get out there and talk about it. And there are a number of corneal specialists that I know in the Triangle who have never prescribed this medicine yet. And you know they have patients that need it, but, you know, just read as much about it and have confidence that you know what you're doing.
Thank you so much for your time. And hopefully we all get very excited to find those patients within our practices that maybe we've kind of thought we can't do anything to help, but there are new tools, new technology out there that optometrists are able to prescribe and are very capable of treating, where we can help our patients truly get better without needing to potentially jump into more invasive or surgical techniques.
Yeah, indeed.
Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast. And remember, we keep it 2020 around here. Pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.